Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
All right, guys, before we get to the podcast, first, I have to apologize for what you're about to hear. We went to Tommy's hotel to record this, set up the mics, tested them, all good. I forgot to click the button that actually transferred the recording to the microphones and not from the computer. So what you're going to hear actually comes from the computer and not from the mics. It's entirely my fault. I've been pretty sick to my stomach about this all day. Especially sorry to Tommy, who took so much time out of his day to record with us. And unfortunately, this is some of the early days of NLU podcast. This is what the audio quality will remind you of. So again, apologies for that. Hope it's not too detrimental to the listening experience. I know that the audio quality is important, but without further delay, here's our great, it's a great interview. I hope you guys stick with it. And without further delay, here's Tommy Fleetwood. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. We are joined today by Mr. Tommy Fleetwood. Tommy, we partied with you a little bit after you won in Abu Dhabi, and you said you would come on the podcast if you got an obnoxious amount of tweets from the listeners. How many did you get?
Enough, clearly. It wasn't too bad, actually, but clearly enough. It didn't take many.
Yeah, well, glad we could finally make this happen. Players' Championship Week. A surprise, you popped this on us today. You flew down from Charlotte today a day early.
Yeah, I did, because apparently I don't miss cooks. But, you know, I thought we'd do this on a Saturday at Wells Fargo.
Only a second miscut in probably, what, a year?
Something like that. Well, like you say, like you informed me, I don't miss cuts, but
we walked in here and Tron goes, yeah, you never miss cuts. And it's like, I'm kind of sitting here because I missed a cut here. we chatted with you a little bit last year around this time. How much has your life changed in the last year?
Quite a lot. My golf has changed a little bit, or it's just got slightly better, but of course, things have changed. I'm growing up quite fast. And it's cool. I've got a 7-month-old son. I'm married. And those kind of things that they change your life. Those things, really.
That's what I want to know. How much did your celebration change between the Abu Dhabi 2017 win and the Abu Dhabi 2018 win?
They were different, yeah. My celebrations kind of stopped after you guys had left, and I ended up just having a meal and going to bed. And the year before, it wasn't quite the same. I did go to bed, but just a lot later, and with a lot less memory in 17. So things do they do change your celebrations for sure.
Did you feel a little better than the Monday after, though?
Yeah, I did. I was a lot clearer in the head.
A question we love to ask people: when was the last time you paid for golf?
I don't know. It's kind of I refuse to pay for golf, pretty much. That's one thing that I just refuse to do. That it just doesn't happen. So if I had to pay, I probably wouldn't play out of principle. Not because I'm a professional golfer. I'm just not going to pay for golf. Play it every week. I'll do it for fun, but I'm not going to pay.
We asked that to Jim Furyk, and I think he said sometime in the 90s was the last time that he paid.
It could be the same. It could be the same, actually, for me. Sometime in the 90s, but that was in my younger days.
Where do you? So you still reside in England, but you're playing like your longest stretch of your first real major stretch of golf on the PGA Tour. Mm-hmm. What have you thought of this kind of 3-month stretch that you've been on here in the US?
I've loved it from start to finish. Like, I played a bit last year. Last year I had that special temporary membership thing where I think it was after. So I did well in Mexico, and I guess US Open might have been where I maybe got my special temporary, but I only played a couple of events like Memorial or a couple others, Bay Hill I played. And this year, so I started at Riviera, and then played through to the Masters, went over for a couple of weeks and now back out. But I've absolutely loved it. I think a couple of things. I think that the different style of golf, I found it more difficult. I found that it's kind of stretched me again in terms of knowing things that I need to improve to compete out here, and working my way into that. It's been great meeting new people again. I mean, I can't wait to see like the European guys again, but meeting new people that you see play golf anyway, because we do watch golf all the time, but it's been fresher, and it's been nice to do all those things and get to know different people. And
what have you found more difficult? You said the PGA Tour found more difficult.
I think there's more emphasis on short game out in America. It's tougher. I found it tougher around the greens and on the greens. Partly, there's a lot more Bermuda out here, so there's been tournaments on different grass that we, as Europeans, we don't play a lot of. So there's been that, and the scoring is just that. I don't know, a lot of the courses like Riviera or Honda or Wells Fargo this week, they're that tough that you can't score really well, but then the scoring's good enough where sort of the cuts, there's just a really small margin between leading and cut, so everything's just becomes more, every shot, you know, you can't really give that much away, and I have a habit of giving shots away a lot of the time, so it's... In terms of that, just short game, just different grasses, greens are a little bit firmer and a little bit slopier, and it's just been working hard on that.
Has there been anything in particular that you've learned in this time period that you're like, all right, now I need to change this about my game, or this is something I really need to work on?
I think it's just made things a little bit clearer. Generally, especially over the last year and a half, my ball striking's been great. It's always been my strength, and putting short game is where I can gain the most shots. So, and then you come out and it just gets emphasised a little bit. So it's just made those things a little bit clearer. It's definitely improved me, for sure. Whatever my stats are. I don't look at stats massively. I do, and I know that they're improving, but I know that it's improved me that bit more just by being out and it being that bit tougher.
What are the hardest weeks decision wise making out your schedule, like the tournaments that are up against each other between the European Tour and PGA Tour? I know you kind of blocked off this stretch mm-hmm. to just play on the PGA Tour, but going through the rest of the summer, where were like the difficult decisions, or how did you come to the conclusions that you got to make out your schedule? There's some tough ones in there.
Yeah, well, there are some tough ones, and this year was almost easier because it was my first year, and I knew, you know what, I'll block these 3 months off. I'm going to come to America, I'm going to really give it a good go, see where we're at. Summer, the Open comes, got big events, got Rolex Series in Europe, and we'll do that. And then after the Open becomes the FedEx is coming up, isn't it? Then PGA, Bridgestone, FedEx is coming up. So it was quite an easy one, but I think after this year, I know there's events that I want to play next year. I know there's events that I'm not going to get to go to this year that I want to play. And I know the schedules all like conflict a little bit. So it's like, I don't know. It is tough, and probably be something that you look at and make a choice at the end of the year. But I think getting your card on the PGA Tour, for us, it's a European, first thing you're going to do is get the European Tour card, but getting a PGA Tour card is great, and you want to keep it, and you want to make the most of it now that we can play over here. So it'll be, next year will definitely be tougher than this year. This year was kind of easy to set out, but knowing that I want to keep playing over here, next year will probably get a bit more difficult.
Do you have a home base here in the States that you've kind of set up over the last few months?
We have close friends that live on the 17th at Bay Hill, actually, so... So I stayed with them for, I think the original 2 month stretch, I had a week and maybe half a week where I wasn't doing anything. So I stayed with them in Orlando, and I like Orlando. Yeah. One flight from Manchester, which kind of doesn't matter how far away you are from home. If you're one flight away, you feel close, don't you? So that was great, but no like base yet. We've not thought about getting a place, which is something that everybody loves to ask. But it has. I'm like 3 months into my PGA Tour journey, if you like. So there's a while to go before we decide to do anything.
We've got a lot more places to go.
You're on the road so much. It's like, do you need two places to live almost? Like,
I know.
A place
know.
To crash with
I mean,
friends.
It would be like ridiculous. This year, I think this year and next year will be my busiest couple of years, just settling over here and trying to play more and doing both tours. So kind of know you're in for like a couple of years of a lot of playing.
Do you think does the way that PGA Tour schedule is going to go out next year, kind of with the players moving up and things yeah. moving around from a European tour standpoint and your unique position, does it favor you or are most Europeans looking at it kind of like this is, yeah. Because I've heard some rumblings from people just with the PGA bumping up and that it kind of, you know, that stretch in May.
I actually think I'm sure it'll work in the European Tour's favor. For sure.
It kind of consolidates it a little bit.
Yeah, it will, won't it? And it'll be great this season finish. When does this season finish next year? Now, August, say? Or?
I think, and it's not finalized yet.
Yeah,
but it's,
you know, it's going to be like something like that. So, and then, you know, we're in Europe. We're in our summer months. Come over and play. I think it'll work really well. And the first time anything changes, it's always like there'll be things that people don't like and there'll be things that people like. But I'm sure we'll figure it out after a year or so. But I think it'll be really good.
So in September of 2016,
well, where are we going now?
You were the 188th ranked player in the world.
That was being generous.
Now I'm not sure where you are now. I think in the top 15 at least now.
Yeah.
What changed the most in that time period?
I got better at golf. For sure. I was struggling like leading up to that. I think 2015 was where I struggled because before that, so in like mid 2015, I got to the top 50 in the world for the first time in my life. And then I started dropping down and struggling. So, talked about it a lot really just because it was kind of a faster climb than what I thought it would be coming back. But went back to my old coach, Finno, one of my best mates. He was best man at my wedding. He's been caddying now for nearly 2 years. It'll be in June. A couple more people sort of came in that I'd worked with before and I was kind of in the middle of moving into a new house with my wife now. And we were doing, you know, life was sort of changing and, but my golf, I was struggling, made a few changes and there was like a lot of hard work that went into it. But basically I hit it a lot better now than I did when I was 188.
We heard some cool stories when we were in Abu Dhabi talking with your instructor about how, and so can you kind of walk us?
Yeah.
He's a humble guy though.
He is actually very.
Yeah. I mean, he was kind of playing it down like, oh, he's this like, you know, ragtag driving range. England. We're like, no, we kind of did some research on the back end.
It's like wherever he goes, everybody loves him, and he's like this really good looking guy. It's like, come on, Tom, you're just like making us all look bad. Just give us a break.
But so, what was that timeline? So, was he your instructor growing up as a kid?
Yes. Well, when I first got into an England sort of squad, so that was, I reckon, must have been like 12, say. You got into this like regional stuff and he was the coach for...
Sorry, what was his name?
Alan Thompson.
That's right, okay.
So like northwest of England, he was the regional coach. So he was the coach then. My first lesson off him was then. And then we've had like three stints since then. I think I went on my own for a bit when I got to like 17 and I thought I knew better. Then got him back. Then, then I started working with him about... Three months before I turned pro, and I got to world number one amateur with him, and then won on tour with him, and then decided I was going to do my own thing again.
The way he told the story though was he kind of nudged you in that direction, even that he thought.
I think at the time it was relationships difficult on like in tour life, they just are, and I think I was kind of. We were pushing something that I wasn't quite getting enough out of, and then we just nudged away from it a little bit. Like expectations were getting high, and what we were working on. It's funny how things just work out like that. It happens all the time. you just can't quite seem to get out what you're trying to do. Fast forward like 3 years later, and we do everything that we were doing before, but more, and I get better. But it just at the time, and just timing happens sometimes. And as long as, I think that's when it's really important, just to leave on good terms and keep good relationships with people, because you always, that's one massive thing I've learned, is that you're probably going to end up working with these guys again. So you have to do it in the right way when you do split from people. And it, you know, for us, it worked out. But yeah, he has a lot of pride in his job. And I think if it's not going how he wants it to, he likes to just, he speaks his mind, and he just wants what's best for you.
And that last time you went back to him, I mean, it was pretty immediate, right? Like you saw the results.
I sent him, I actually sent my dad a text first to ask him what to do, because I was in China, and like there's not been like much said about it, but I had a yip at the time with like my driver, and I couldn't keep it on the golf course at all, and I was playing this practice round, and I thought, this is like, what am I doing here? This is just ridiculous. I'm in middle of China with nobody here, can't hit me out, I've got no chance of making the cut, what's the point? And anyway, I sent Tomo a couple of videos, because my dad said, he said just text Tomo, because Tomo knows your swing better than anybody, just text him. So I sent him a couple of videos. I asked him first if it'd be all right looking, and I was kind of, you know, half thinking he might say no here. but he was made up to have a look, and he had a look, so that would have been like April time, say. And then we sort of started working, and then Wentworth 2016, so that was May, was like my lowest point ever, where I was playing the practice rounds. I played a pro-am, and we play this thing, par is your friend now. So if you can't make a birdie, you just pick up. And I think that day I hit 12 tee shots and just walked the rest of the course with my playing partners. It was just awful.
Jeez.
And I walked off that pro-am, and I thought, oh my God. I went, you know what? And Finno actually came to watch. So Finno wasn't caddying at the time. He comes to watch because he's one of my mates. And I see him Thursday morning, and he was like, how's it going? And I said, I was teeing off in the afternoon. I said, I don't think I'm going to play. I can't get it off the first tee. I don't like the first tee shot there anyway. And I said, Finno, honestly, I don't think I can make it off the first tee. And he was like, what's wrong with you? I went, listen, I can't hit the ball. I'm horrendous. Anyway, I play first tee shot. I step up and I teed this driver about a millimetre off the deck. I hit it 40 yards into the trees, right, and I was really happy because I didn't top it. as long as I got it off the tee and I found it, I was going to be happy. Played horrific, and I actually shot like level par or something, which is unbelievable. But Finno said it was the worst he'd ever seen me play. So that was the lowest, and we'd been working together for like a month at the time. And sort of from that point, everything had to move forward because it couldn't go any worse, so it had to move forward. And then once we sort of got a little bit of momentum, things started to get a little bit better, but it's always difficult. Your game can come back, but when your head's like, you've lost so much confidence, it takes a little bit longer for that to come back.
If you're not sure what to get mom or grandma or the wife this year for Mother's Day, Travis Matthew Apparel is actually here to save the day. Yes, Travis Matthew is a leader in men's lifestyle apparel, but they do have you covered. From now until Thursday, May 10th, any purchase you make at travismatthew.com, you'll receive an online voucher good for $40 off flowers at The Books Company. That's right, farm fresh flowers from one of the premier online floral retailers delivered to the mom in your life. Go to travismatthew.com today. Take advantage of it while you still can. I just put an order in for a bunch of new summer stuff. I wear my cruiser shoes pretty much on a daily basis to the point I wore them ragged, and I actually had to order some new ones. So go to travismatthew.com. Check out some of their stuff. I promise you'll enjoy it, especially with summer upon us quickly. But for now, let's get back to Tommy Fleetwood.
So Finno was just a buddy of yours. Did he have any caddy experience before he came on your bag?
He caddied for me as an amateur in quite a few events, but he'd never done it as a pro. But we kind of said if the chance comes up, like we'll try and give it a go. So it was a risk for him, because when I asked him, I was playing terrible.
What was he doing?
He was working at the golf club that it's like a pro, like part playing, part handyman around the place.
Was it Formby Hall? Or,
yeah, okay. Formby Hall, yeah. So, you know, he was perfectly comfy in his job. He probably, you know, he's happier now, I hope. But it was a risk for him as well. I was playing terrible, and I just said, you know, do you want to come and do it? Let's do a month and see how it goes. 2 years later, we're stuck with each other. So,
how's his game?
He thinks it's better than what it is. He played, when did we play last? We played the other day, and he actually played all right. We played all right at home, but we played Isleworth whilst we were in America. And it, I'll tell you what it was. It was the week after the match play, and it decided he was going to copy Bubba's foot action because there'd been a lot of talk of it on the Golf Channel.
Brandled.
And it was, it was Bubba's fault that day why he played terrible, because he couldn't use his foot action. So Bubba got like a slating because of his foot action for that.
I mean, Finno is like one of the larger human beings I've ever seen.
He is.
He's really long.
He is, yeah.
Is he hit it far?
He doesn't use his leverage as well as as well as he could.
Was there a learning curve for him coming on the bag? Was there any kind of funny moments of fumbling around?
Actually, I think it's great doing it as mates, because you don't feel as nervous when you're sort of together. And I know for the first couple of weeks it was probably difficult for him, and he didn't, you know, he knows the game of golf, but when you're caddying it's slightly different. He doesn't know where to stand sometimes, or break that bunker or get the pin when you're supposed to get it. So it takes a little bit to get into it, but being the big lad that he is, and being, you know, how much he talks, he makes friends quick. And we kind of got into it quite quickly, really. So not sure how many, I mean, there's plenty of, how many funny stories have we got? Between us, we've probably got a lot, but he did sort of get into it very quick, and he didn't, you know, he never struggled with anything, and basically he would just ask me, really. It wasn't like he was caddying for somebody he didn't know, so he'd just say, what am I supposed to do here? And I'd say, oh, just do what you want here. Nobody will tell you what to do anyway, so you're all right.
And then at some point, I mean, did the two of you guys just kind of look at each other and say, you believe this is happening? Like, you believe this is?
Yeah, I think US Open, like, didn't think much about it second round, but like the last 2 days we were kind of, I think we were driving in on the morning of, might have been the fourth day, but third day we enjoyed until the 18th. And then the last day, I think we were driving into Fleetwood Mac, and we were like buzzing driving in. And that it was to that day that it was like a year since I'd been caddying. So I thought this is destined, this. Got this in the bag. But yeah, I think at that point we were like, this is that year on from where we were. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty drastic.
Oh, massively, yeah. Because when he started, we missed like four cuts in a row, and we got knocked out of the first round of this Paul Laurier match play, and we just had nothing going. So a year on to where we were trying to win a major was pretty big.
Did that feel? How different did it feel to be in contention of a major championship versus? I mean, you had obviously won before, but did that feel totally different in that scenario?
Yeah, and no-ish. I think, to be fair, it was the first time I've been in contention in America, so that was the biggest difference. And it kind of just came about, and we didn't. At no point did I feel sort of struck with nerves, or I couldn't believe that we were competing in a major, or we were literally having a good time and doing our best, and I didn't. Sunday, I just didn't get off to the start I wanted to, really. I played like a couple of rope tee shots, a missed club, and it was just like I had an 8-hole period where things didn't quite happen, and there's still had chances to get back into it, but it didn't feel like out of this world crazy that we were competing in a major, because I've been on such good form anyway that it...
You felt like you belonged out there.
Yeah, and I was happy that you never know how it's going to go, so I didn't win, but... felt like made a good showing of myself. You're more proving it to yourself than anything. You're not. I mean, you're playing in front of millions of people for the, you know, first time. It's world TV playing in a major, but you know you need to show yourself that you have what it takes to. I might never win a major, but I know that it won't be down to the sort of me not being able to do it inside of me. It'll just be that I don't play well enough or something.
What did you think of Erin Hills as a test? Was that kind of a golf course? Yeah, I can imagine. But it's probably not the U.S. Open that you grew up watching on TV.
No, true. I've played two U.S. Opens so far, and they've been Chambers Bay and Erin Hills, so I've yet to experience the full U.S. Open experience.
We certainly will this year.
It's going to be a little different this year.
So those have been my two. And so, yeah, slightly different to what everybody talks about.
At some point after, I mean, it was a crazy run, kind of spring, early summer last year. At some point, did you think of, hey, I'm exhausted, or kept on going? You went over to Europe the week after you finished sixth at the BMW International, and then you won in France the following week after that.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, did all the travel catch up with you, or were you just kind of riding a six-month adrenaline?
I kind of rode the wave a little bit. At the time, I think US Open, Germany, France, I was playing like the best golf that I'd ever played at the time. So the game just sometimes it just feels so easy, and then sometimes you feel so far away from being able to win a golf tournament. You kind of just got to get used to that. Like this week was one of them for me. Feels so far away from, felt like I played okay, but I'd shot six over and there's guys there shooting 9 under today. I feel so far away from being able to do that, and I don't understand why, but weeks like the French Open, felt like I couldn't lose. The opposite end of the spectrum of golf, I guess, and it all just comes as part of it. But I, massively rode that wave towards the end of the year. I was probably getting tired, but I couldn't really have a week off because I was trying to win the race to Dubai.
And then you had a kid.
Exactly, yeah. So I had the baby. I was just about to say, when did we have the baby? Then? I didn't know that. It was 28th of September, I literally went straight out to play. And I'd had 6 out of 7 weeks off. I played in Switzerland where I missed the cut, and it's no surprise really. I was kind of hanging around waiting for a baby to pop out at that point. But I literally went straight out playing after he'd been born. And that's like a long time on the road again, but I was kind of buzzing that I just became dad, so adrenaline was going, and I was absolutely fine. I'd had a nice rest. But then towards the end of the year, I was getting kind of jaded towards the end of the year.
These guys are making fun of me for bringing up the Ryder Cup this early, but okay, winning it at the French Open. It's time, yeah. That's why I'm asking. So winning at that course, does that get you even more fired up for potentially being on the Ryder Cup team this year? Does it fit your games in particular, is it just a hot week?
It's funny you mention that because before that, I'd not played the French Open for a couple of years because I'd missed the cut 4 times in a row around there. And there was no reason. I'd missed the cut by like 1, 3 out of 4 times, and I kept doubling the last, kept knocking in the water on the last. So this last year just happened to be different. I was a lot more confident and my game was in a different place. Kind of don't need extra motivation to be in the Ryder Cup team, but I would love to go there. And I think especially this year, I think the standard of the American team and the European team, I think it's just going to be such an amazing Ryder Cup, this one coming up. And to be part of it at the sort of position golf's in at the moment, and the players that have been to be in the Ryder Cup this time would be brilliant. Yeah.
And talking to some of the European Tour guys that have said that if they don't make the team, they're going to attend as fans. Like it's that exciting. But have you been involved, I guess, in any part of the process? Have you guys started talking about potential pairings, or have there been team meetings of any kind or anything?
Do I call him Thomas or Captain? I don't quite know yet. I've called him far worse than he was. He's been very like upfront, and he's been very around and talking to people. He's been really on it, and he's been great since he's been appointed captain. He's been great. Players constantly know where they stand, and he's definitely been talking about it, and he's clearly got stuff in mind. I think the Eurasia Cup, that was him testing out some stuff, and it can all change, right. Change, can't it? But I think there's no parents that I think not anybody would be displeased with whoever's in the team. So
it's going to get interesting with the final captain's picks and stuff, the way the points list breaks out and the world points. And like, they're just looking at the list and there are going to be some names. It's a good problem for you guys.
So difficult to get into. Oh. And I've thought that when people have asked about it, it's clearly the standard of golf is so high at the moment. Just for me on a personal level, I have to have in the greatest year of my life by a mile and winning the race to Dubai. Still not guaranteed to be in that team. I still got to keep playing well. So when I look at it for myself, I just think, how good is the standard at the moment of golf that you're having such an amazing time and you're still nowhere near being safe. You just got to keep going.
It's a good problem to have. And I think the US team's, I think, has improved, but the European team has improved dramatically since 2016. So
I want to see Levy on the team. He seems like he's...
As long as he's not in front of me.
Yeah.
No, it'll be great.
I think he might kind of somewhat thrive in that environment. Yeah, not a shy guy. All right, so we talked a bit about your rise from, you know, being around 200 ranked player to where you are now. What are some of the best benefits that come with like your current stature in the game? Do the courtesy cars get nicer?
I had a nice Mercedes last week, actually.
Yeah.
I had to wait like half an hour at the airport for it, but I got a nice Mercedes out of it. But the only problem was I missed the cut and then like wanted to pack up and leave and then the car wouldn't start and they were devastated actually. They thought it was fine. I was like, it's fine. Just get me back somehow. It just summed up the day. Benefits. Get good tee times. Play the Tiger at the Masters.
As I say, getting into some of these feature groups, does it change the way your Thursday, Friday rounds go?
It doesn't change them, but it's nice sort of being in those situations. And it's playing with Tiger at the Masters was just about as cool as it gets for a golfer, isn't it?
Was that the first time you'd play with her?
First time I'd ever played with him, yeah. Kind of sensed it was coming at some point, but his return to the Masters was quite a heavy one to go in head first. I enjoyed it.
How talkative was he during the Thursday, Friday?
Yeah, we had a couple of good chats and that. And
did you know each other before that at all? Had you met him?
Yeah, well, the first time we properly met, said hello a couple of times at events, but I'd not been around in America until 15, 17, that kind of thing. And then his tournament last year at the Bahamas when we played, that was the first time we'd properly met and talked a little bit. And got to know each other, so and then we've seen each other around this year whilst we've both been playing. So,
you weren't around for the early parts of his career, but he's a lot more talkative, it seems like, these days than he was back in that day.
He probably wouldn't have talked to me as an 8-year-old kid when he was in comp or something, but he's great, and I loved playing with him. Just he was, if I'd never met him and I didn't know who he was. I played golf with him, I'd have walked off and I said, you know what, I'd love to play with him again. He was so easy to play with. Talks now and again, or he'll talk if you want to talk, gets on with his own game. He played fast and he's good. So it was great, really. Just on the first hole, sort of the first experience of it, we walked to the first tee and the atmosphere was absolutely buzzing. It was his return, isn't it? 3 years have gone. And he comes back, and it was like, this is proper atmosphere on the first tee.
I thought the buzz was for Leishman.
Not me.
Sure, it's not for you.
play down the first, and I've got this 3 foot of a par, and Tiger puts this long foot up and taps in. And 90% of the crowd have just done a 180-degree turn and just gone off to the second. Whilst I've got this 3 foot, and I thought, come on, is this going to be all day? But it wasn't like that at all. I just thought we were in for one of them rides, and it was great playing with him. And I think 16, day one, he holed a putt for a two, and it was like the biggest. It was like the biggest roar. Me and Leishman like looked at each other.
Cool.
I had a putt after him, and I didn't mind it, but that's not part of the story. But I walked to the edge of the green, and I said to Tiger, I said, did your putt go in? And he's like, kind of sounded like it did. That's how I score. But then on that same green, I think it was the next day, and we were stood there on the 16th green, and Tiger's just stood waiting to putt, and he stood leaning on his putter, and I'm mesmerized by this Scotty. And I'm looking at it thinking, oh my God, there's so much history in this putter. And not knowing where to ask, can I touch it or something? And anyway, when I've come out this daze and I've turned around and Finno's stood there and he's just doing exactly the same thing, staring at this putter. And we're both looking at this putter that's won all these tournaments and 14 majors. And he clocked me looking at him and he was like, oh my God, this is putter.
So it still has definitely has like a presence about him playing with him, and it affects it. Okay, I mean that doesn't surprise me, but just kind of interesting to hear that perspective while you're in
still
the
want to beat him.
Yeah, just hear that perspective while you're playing next to him. Is there anything like you kind of picked up from the way he plays Augusta, or a little like did you learn much from him seeing how he navigates around that golf course? And I didn't have his best week, but
no, he didn't have his best week. I think he didn't play great. But I think just watching him, it's difficult sometimes when you concentrate on your own game and Augusta isn't the kind of place where you can just switch off for a couple of holes and watch Tiger Woods have a knock. He might not be playing like he was in 2000, say, but still doesn't give anything away. Like, he's still right on it. He grinds it out. I loved that. Still has that confidence in his ability, and he still plays shots that, you know, he plays to win. I really, really sort of enjoyed sort of watching him do that. And obviously the first time I've ever seen him play. So that was like just the stuff that I took away from that.
Who was your favorite player growing up?
Ernie was like my hero. And I went to a clinic when I was eight, and it was at Wentworth, and I went to a clinic of his. And remember, it was like an Adidas thing, and we got a T-shirt for it. And he had a picture with me, and he chatted to me for a little bit. And so Ernie had always been, I wanted to copy his swing. He'd always been like my hero. And then when I met him, he was great. And when I turned pro and I played with him in Dubai, I think, years ago, and he was brilliant to play with. But last year, Claire was pregnant at the time, and we were in Germany. And we had this dinner, this like BMW dinner, and there was me and Claire, a couple of people from BMW, and Ernie and his wife. And when we got drinks, just before we ate, Ernie stood up and he did a toast to say good luck with the baby and everything. You know, here's to your unborn baby, hope everything's good. I didn't really say anything at the time, but I got in the car and I was like clearly beaming, and Claire's like, what's wrong with you? I went, you've no idea what's just happened. And I said, Ernie, he's my hero, and he's just like made a toast to my unborn baby. But it's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And so Ernie's like still a legend in my eyes. And then obviously Junior Golf Tiger was in his prime, so I grew up watching him, but it was kind of, Ernie was my original.
I'm curious, so with Nike getting out of the equipment business, you hung on to that Nike driver for a really long time. Do you still carry Nike clubs in your bag?
Irons? I've got Nike irons and the Nike fairway ones.
Why are you just, it's a right fit for you and you just don't want to get rid of them?
They're the irons from years ago as well. They're not even the right irons that they did. When Nike made the announcement was late 16, and I was just getting, my game was coming back. So I said, you know what, I don't even want to contemplate trying to change anything because I'm on my way back to playing well here. So let's just stick with what we've got. And we'll just make our decision now. It's playing with Nike clubs and that's it. Don't want to try anything. Don't let anybody like try and tell me to try anything. I think I've used a different putter every week for about 7 weeks, but irons were staying the same as woods. And then at the end of the year, I didn't touch a club for like a month. Come back out, so I haven't touched a club, I haven't practiced, and then won in Abu Dhabi. And I was like, well, can't change clubs now. Just won for the first time in 3 years. So then I stuck with them, kept playing really well, and I was having my best year of my life. And I just couldn't change, couldn't do it. And then I changed driver just because I thought I'm going to have to change something here. Changed driver and I took it out. I think my first event with it was the Dunhill. So St. Andrews, I thought, it's the widest course in the world. I might as well try a new driver on St. Andrews and I'll be all right. And that's literally the only club I've changed. Callaway Wedges, I changed to them. We went to Hong Kong at the end of the year in 2016. And when we got there, I'd put the Callaway Wedges in the bag and I thought, I'll try them this week. I'll just practice with them. Might use me Nikes, but I'll try them anyway. We got there and I'd forgotten to bring my Nike wedges, so I had to change to Callaway wedges. Did well with them, so I just put them in, and that was how that went. But the irons, I've got a new set of them Nike irons now. They've just been made.
So they'll still make equipment?
Well, the guys that used to work, so Mike T and a bunch of the guys, they've got their own company now called Artisan Golf, and they just happened by chance to have a set of my old heads. Made them up for me, shipped them off, and I've put them in the bag since, and they've gone in now. So my last set of irons kind of bent a little bit from wear at the hosel, so then I was forced to change, but I got this new set, so they're just staying in. But I've been trying stuff, and it's like you're so close, but it's so difficult to change, especially when you've had clubs for so long. I mean, I've got that irons now, that's 6 years and counting that I've used the same irons, the same heads. The woods I've had for 2 years just gets more and more difficult to change.
More mental than anything.
You're still just looking down. Yeah, I mean, fairway woods are finicky, but you can get something close, but it's still so difficult. And I mean, you're not gonna walk out to Sawgrass this week with a brand new set of woods and gonna feel the same as the ones you've had for 2 years. It's just difficult to find the timing.
It was funny. I was playing with a guy that plays on the web.com tour today, and he cracked his driver today, and he was devastated. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I mean, you could just pop a new head on there. He's like, no, that's not the same. No. It does not.
I feel his pain.
And he's talking about, like, it feels different at impact, or like on my downswing, I can feel the crack. And I was like, all right, you guys are up. I know that you guys are operating on a totally different level than we are, but that's pretty brutal. Growing up in Southport, how bad, and I think we kind of talked about last year going into it, how bad was the media blitz going into the Open Championship last year?
Yeah, it was a big one. It was like for a couple of weeks before, whenever I was at home, because I went to have a couple of practice rounds there. My mum and dad still live in Southport and I've still got friends there, but there's like these posters up on these lampposts and it was me. I was like, oh, it's that. It was just
You knew it was coming.
I knew it was coming, yeah. But it was pretty crazy. And I think that I got really, really nervous on the Wednesday of the tournament because I walked onto the tee and Wednesday was the busiest day it had been. And it's just for a practice round and it was like packed. People clapping me onto the tee and stuff. And I was like, oh my God.
That's where we heard a lot of, come on, Tommy Ladd. Oh, a lot of Tommy Ladd chants.
Yeah, I didn't have to play with, but Henrik, that's all he calls me now. Henrik Stenson just calls me Tommy Ladd.
Maddie Kelly was in. He's like, just come on, Tommy Ladd.
Yeah, because we played with him, didn't we? Yeah. And
whenever you pop up on TV, still to this day, we say, Tommy Ladd.
Come on, Tommy Ladd.
it was pretty mental, and obviously Thursday was like the biggest come down ever when I just played horrific and shot six over. And there was like a really like shitty article in one of the papers by like a reporter that had proper slagged me off for playing bad, and I'd done an interview where I said I didn't feel like I played that bad, I just made some terrible errors. And anyway, it was this really crappy article. I can't remember his name now, but I didn't enjoy that.
What did the article say then?
Just that I'd like blown it and it was too big for me, and then I was trying to say that I didn't play that bad, and it was like, you know, telling me to get a grip and stuff, and it was just, I'd actually never experienced like a bad article about me before, so hopefully I don't have to experience it too much, but anyway, so it was like a really big week, because all of a sudden I was like the poster boy for the Open, and it was at home, and then Friday, you know, till the day that I finished playing will be one of the best rounds I ever play. It was such a big thing to make the cut, and it was horrific weather, shot under par.
That's right.
I think there was only like four rounds under par all day. So that was massive. And then the Saturday I was playing with Justin Rose, and we were out at 9:30, but the gates open at 9. The leaders are out at like 3. So everybody coming in, they were watching our group, and it was like 10 deep for about the first 9 holes. And that was the biggest crowd I've ever played in front of. And yeah, it was just a crazy week all around. Like schools sort of sending me messages or posters in schools, and it was an amazing experience for that. And especially a year ago when I played the Open at Troon, and that was at the time where I was really struggling. We just had that kind of period where sort of every tournament we were like, oh, a year on and we've got this, a year on, look where we are now. And yeah, it's something that will be special forever. I'd have loved to have played better and just sort of had like a chance or something coming down like the back nine or on Sunday, but it wasn't to be, but it was still amazing.
A lot of tipsters didn't stretch too far to say you won in France and then, oh, he's from Southport, he's going to be a favorite for the Open. I looked at it, I was kind of like, if anything, it might be a distraction, I think. But I mean, it's not like you grew up playing Royal Birkdale. I mean, you played there some, but it wasn't your home course.
I think you're allowed like one round a year around there.
Right.
And that's if you're playing with somebody that's a member there. So it's really difficult to get on there.
That's stingy.
Formby Hall, where I'm a member at, is like the only Parkland course in the town. So everybody thinks I'm like this amazing links guy, and I play at the only Parkland course in where I grew up. But I've played it enough. I played it more than most people in the field, but it wasn't like I had all this local knowledge.
Right. Where are some of your favorite places to play in that area?
Hillside's amazing. I would like they give me membership there as well, so I love that. We've got that. West Lancs is where Finno's a member, so we go there and play. One of my best mates is a member at Hoylake, so we go there and play. Lytham is just down the road from there, but Lytham I've always found like too hard. It's not enjoyable to play a course that hard just for fun.
252 bunkers, something like that.
We went
in March of last year and played all those.
It just kills you.
Oh.
I think West Lancs was my favorite.
I'll let Finno know. Finno will love that. So he's like,
oh, we've been hitting him. We hit him up. So next time we're there, we're gonna go out to West Lancs.
He'll be there. He'll be there.
That
we'll
place.
Probably have that week off in caddying.
I think we also had the nicest weather you could possibly. We were raving about Hoylake, and everybody we talked to was like, "Yeah, it's like this maybe 3 days a year."
Yeah,
those days you got to have a beer afterwards just to sit and enjoy the sun. Yeah.
But yeah, that whole area of golf courses, it doesn't come to the top of people's mind like from the States. And I know that American travelers go there, but they think Scotland and they think Ireland when doing an international trip.
Yeah,
but
Southport as a town, it's like, and just that stretch of coast is unbelievable. You're not really going to get anywhere better than that
you can throw a blanket almost over all those courses and enjoy.
Do you feel like you play well in adverse conditions and bad weather because you're from there?
It doesn't like bother me if it's terrible weather. Still certain shots that I'd like to be better at, and you kind of lose practice at it when you come out and play on tour because you don't actually get horrendous conditions that much, so you kind of lose your feel for it. But I generally like it. The tougher the conditions, I like it, just because it can rule a few guys out, and it just makes it that bit more difficult. And if you're up for the challenge, you're better off.
Help us remember the hole. We were with you in Abu Dhabi. I think it was the 16th hole of the final round. Back into that wind, the shot you hit on Sunday.
Into
Do you
the
remember
wind,
that?
Into the sun.
Oh, the 5-iron. Yeah. I didn't know where it had gone. But I knew it was like somewhere that was
right. We were watching you stand over this shot, like, all right, this is tough, and you just wailed on a 5-iron.
Yeah,
you and Finno were.
I'd love to have watched it.
Yeah,
but I couldn't see it.
that was one of the better shots I've ever seen.
I was happy with the putt. I was just happy the putt went
right
real far at that point.
Back 9:30 to win.
So was that win? Was that kind of? I mean, obviously you're going out and expecting to win, but honestly, was that surprising at all? To go out after not having touched a club for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, when it was, yeah, so like, I'd never done that before, kind of. But I don't know, the last 2 years I've turned up to Abu Dhabi, I felt like I've been hitting it okay, and I've had sort of a few days practice and felt like I'm really close, and it just so happens that I've turned up and played really well. And it's a course where I think the first... say my first four times or five times I played it, I made the cut once, missed the cut a bunch of times, and I win in 17, and I turn up this year and I just feel like the course really suits me all of a sudden when I've not been able to see a score around it for ages. So this year was weird because I never defended a title before. I never turned up as defending champion, and kind of feels like it's your trophy. You don't want to give it back.
Well, plus you had not only that, you had all the media stuff for winning the race to Dubai as well.
Oh yeah, it was amazing week. Yeah, got that player of the year, which that was really cool. Loved that. So it was like a busy week, and I just sort of got through. I was just playing really well first 2 days. Again, I played with Dustin and Rory. When am I ever going to get a better three ball in my life than that? And I really enjoyed that. It was my birthday on the Friday.
Rory brought you a cake.
I've still not seen that cake since he gave it. he took it back, and then I've not seen it since. It was just one of them weeks, and then got really hot. The one thing about it that's kind of a little bit of a downer is that generally on any time it's shown like a European Tour advert now or like something about the tournament, it's got my swing on the 18th in a 3-wood, and it was like a fat duck up into the grandstand, and that's the one swing that they show from that tournament.
We have a slow motion version of it.
Yeah.
Trust me, you don't want to see it.
No.
It was not good.
It's like this horrendous little 3-wood toey fat hook that was like devastating.
I know, I'm sure you've told the story a lot of times. I don't think I've ever heard it, and I know a lot of our listeners have not, but I want to hear, how did you meet your wife? I want to hear like the genesis of your guys' relationship and how that came about.
She tells it better than me.
Okay.
Basically she was an agent. She worked for, a management company she worked for an agency, and so she was out on tour a lot. And we kind of got to know each other through that. Just, you know, you get to know people, don't you? I flirted with her a lot, to be fair. I put in a lot of, like, one-liners, which you just thought I was joking. But it just so happens that I signed with the company.
Not because of her?
She recruited me, but her looks weren't part of the deal. That wasn't why I signed. I signed because it seemed like the best idea at the time. And I think just then, as time went on and we actually spent more time together, I'd already made it clear that she was very hot, but she'd never really returned that feeling to me. And it just happened. The more time we spent together, sort of, we ended up falling for each other. Long story short, she finally caved in. I managed to woo her, and she now just works for. She's my agent now, and we're separate from everything. Got married, had a baby, and kind of finished things off. But that was it. It was just from tour life, really. When you meet people and you're talking, and eventually must have said a one-liner that worked.
As I say, it's got to help to have somebody that understands every cycle kind of what you do, right? And kind of is familiar with process and everything.
I mean, and there's nobody that I would trust more on the planet. And she, you know, she looks after everything. And she's got a lot of experience in sport. She worked for motorsport for 8 years before golf. So she's very good at the job as well. But keeping things very close-knit. It's great, and it's something that's very rarely done. And it's just nice to have that, really. Everything's just under one roof.
Cool. Got a few grab bag here before we wrap up, but we want to hear about your first win was the 2011 Kazakhstan Open.
Oh, you took the word right out. I was gonna ask about that one.
Tell us about Kazakhstan. What's that like?
It's great.
Yeah? Because if you win there, I'm sure.
Are you playing at altitude? Is it high?
No, I don't even, was it high? I know it's the largest landlocked country in the world. So if you want a fact on Kazakhstan, then I've got it for you. It's where we were. It was an amazing hotel. Course was brilliant. And that's about all that we really saw of Kazakhstan. We didn't go out exploring, not really knowing at the time what was going on, but it was cool. I mean,
how long did you play on the challenge tour?
Just a year. I when I turned pro in 2010, I got like 5 invites on the challenge tour. Late on, I got a challenge tour card from that. Went to Q school, missed the cut at second stage, and then had a year on challenge tour. And just, you know, kind of obviously winning. If you win Kazakhstan, it's like winning 3 tournaments on the challenge tour. It's like the major there. So I just happened to pick a good one to win and then got my card through that.
What was the craziest place you went with the challenge tour?
Colombia. It's got to be Colombia. Like the first 3 events of that year, you went India, which is amazing. Then there's like a month off and you go to Colombia. Wasn't as amazing. And then you have a month off, and then Kenya is the next one. So those are our first 3 events that year on that challenge tour.
Wow. What is your favorite stop to make worldwide?
Well, it is St. Andrews. Just love the place, love the course, and love the town. I know it's very close to home, and there could be like a lot more like places you could pick, but St. Andrews for me is just as good as it gets. I love it.
What PGA Tour event or events are you, and it may not be on the schedule this year, but for future years, which ones are you really looking forward to playing?
Colonial,
yeah,
for sure. I played the course like in winter 1 year, but you remember in Fort Worth, the oven used to be there when it was Nike, mm-hmm. So I'd been there and I visited. Colonial's definitely one that I want to play. And there's a lot. I think Pebble Beach, I really want to go to next year and play on that coast. So they're a couple right at the front of my mind.
You played in the 2009 Walker Cup at Marion.
Yes.
Had you played much in the States at all leading up to that?
That was my first trip to America, I think.
What did you think of that?
Second trip, because I played the Jones Cup at Ocean Forest.
Okay.
And we weren't used to that kind of golf. struggled big time on that. Just so amateur stuff for us, we play so much links golf, and being short-sighted just isn't really a thing for us in links golf. It's never been a big deal to us, and all of a sudden you miss it in the wrong spot and you're absolutely dead. And it just took time for us to get used to that. And we were playing against a strong American team, and we got our asses kicked.
What I'm curious as to, this is the longest stretch you've spent in the United States, right? Mm-hmm. These last 3 months. What have, is there anything from just a overall cultural perspective of the state that surprised you, or what do you find kind of unique about American culture?
I love the enthusiasm from the people, from, you know, just as a, not just a golf tournament aspect. I love the positivity and the enthusiasm that just, you know, is around. There's a lot of Starbucks.
You got one right now.
I know, yeah. I just had to have I needed a shot just before I came in here, so I can give you my best. I think those are the main things for me, and I really like, I do actually really like that side of it. And I know there's like a thing about drink at golf tournaments at the moment, but I love it.
Yeah.
Late on a Friday afternoon, getting with the crowd going, I enjoy it.
Well, in Abu Dhabi, that brunch Friday.
Brunch Friday.
Oh my god!
Brunch
Friday is something that everybody should do.
if we ever go back, we aren't doing media thing that day. We're doing Brunch Friday.
Singing me happy birthday on the 17th.
That's right.
On Brunch Friday.
We went over there thinking it was going to be, you know, we're going to the Middle East. It's going to be
maybe dry.
Not much alcohol. No. Oh my! I was mind blown.
Yes. Brunch Friday.
All right, Tommy, thank you so much for the hour. Glad people harassed you enough that you came on. So
keep going.
Yeah, we can. We can keep going if you got more. No, we won't take up any more of your time. Really appreciate it, though. Glad we can make it happen. And best of luck this week.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Yeah! Tommy, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!